Mark Stouffer Hunter. Tim Oberbruckling.
Here.
Todd McNall.
Present.
Rod Musman. Ron Lower.
Here.
Crystal Walter.
Here.
Diana Pagan.
Present.
Arthur Kim.
Bit of a mess, but here.
Okay, we do have guests, so we can start at that. And if you just want to introduce yourself and tell us why you're here.
Sure. Jeff Capps with Cedar Alley Habitat for Humanity. Here about agenda item 4B. So thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Cindy, and I should say Cedar Heritage. I would like the public comment to speak.
Amanda McKnight Grafton, Friends of Cedar Rapids Historic Preservation. Excuse me, and I'm here for item 4D.
Eric Bushman, also here for 4D. Eric Bushman, please for properties.
Okay, this is a time for public comments. Cindy?
Regarding the Cabin Court home, we did not find a mover for it, which is unfortunate, but it's the latest in a string of demolitions after the commission placed a 60-day hold, and it's very disappointing. Yeah. And I do hope that the city can be more proactive about publicizing these.
We don't really discuss it this. I think we both nonprofits can do a better job too as far as getting the word out, pictures and stuff. Public comment? Adam, should we go out of order since we have guests?
We can absolutely do that.
Meeting minutes. Oh, meeting minutes, I'm sorry. Is everyone here? Thank you. Have I had a chance to review the meeting minutes?
I did.
If they're okay, do I have an motion?
They were okay for me, so I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes from last week.
I'll second. We have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Let's jump down to action item 4B, funding consideration for historic rehabilitation, cancer alert program, Cedar Valley Habitat Humanity.
All right.
I'm wondering if we should, just so there's some context, I'm wondering if we shouldn't start with 4A because there's a relationship between the two. That
doesn't matter to me. I just know okay. Jeff has to leave.
Oh,
I'm okay.
You have time?
For a while.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
So I know we, the last commission meeting, we had brought recommendations for revising this program, and you had all approved that recommendation after some discussion in community development and receiving an application from Habitat, which we'll discuss after this. We've created a few more additional revisions, so we'll go through those. The first one is that we would like to allow new construction to be listed as an eligible project. We realize that this is an instance that won't happen very often, but when it does, we believe that there's an extra cost burden to people building in the local historic district with these extra restrictions, and so we want to provide the same benefit that someone rehabbing a home could have, and so that's why we added this new construction as an eligible project. The second point, we wanted to allow nonprofits to be eligible for the larger grants. So as we've discussed previously, there's the $5,000 with a 50% cost share, and then 100% AMI or lower can be eligible for up to $7,500. And we kind of determined that nonprofits should be eligible for that larger grant. They're obviously, you know, serving our community, and their income isn't necessarily reflective of, you know, less need per se. So we thought that would be good. And that's kind of been the practice in the past anyway with back when we did the grant and loan, we would give them a grant. And then the third point, we wanted to kind of clarify when this program was initially started, it was kind of the basic practice was that community development could approve projects because the guidelines are so clear-cut currently, and will be, that it's very easy to approve or deny, and it has to go to HPC for certificate of appropriateness if it requires that. And so we wanted to just clarify that in the guidelines, that going forward, if we receive an application and there's no competition for funding, so if we don't get more applications and funding available, that community development could approve that administratively, and then we would present that funding to HPC, so you would see what the program has been funding. So basically clarifying that community development can administratively approve these applications unless there's some prioritization that needs to be made with funding. And so those are kind of our recommendations for the additional revisions that we'd like to make, and these are kind of the next steps after this meeting, if it's recommended by HPC.
We okayed everything prior to this, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So these are just...
So it's just discussion on these additional items.
Does anyone have any questions in regards to these?
My big question was... is there a line, or should there be a line, of how, at what point is it new construction versus a rehab? Are you going from, like, is new construction mean that it's bare abandoned, or is there a point where you are using an existing foundation?
So new construction versus remodel?
Yeah. Like, if you're using the foundation of an old house, is that a new construction, or is that a remodel, or is it...
Either one of those would fall into the category,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's not particularly relevant to the habitat application, or for, you know, if we do the new construction as eligible, but it's a question that I had.
And I think typically building services requires, so as part of the demo, you remove the foundation as well.
Okay.
However, I don't know if if someone were to go upstairs and say, hey, I want to demo this house, but use the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That might be possible. So,
mm-hmm.
But regardless, I think either a situation would be.
Mm-hmm.
I am hesitant about opening this to nonprofits. Huge supporter for Habitat for Humanity, volunteer myself personally, but I feel like they have access to other funding sources, whereas private citizens do not. We only have $38,000 for this whole next year. I just am hesitant to open the floodgates like this now.
Just as a counterpoint to that, and not kind of married to any kind of idea, if we are opening it up to commercial properties, then I would say nonprofits would be.
We were not opening it to commercial.
We did in the past revision. That we just got approved, that allows for commercial properties.
Yeah, the roofs too. Because
I would say nonprofits would need a more commercial.
Yeah.
Then you got a whole spectrum.
So then the HPC would have to come in and based on prioritizing.
And I would just say, we've in the past already allowed nonprofits to apply for this funding. We're just kind of clarifying that we would give them the larger grant. So if the HPC decided that they didn't want to do that, that's another kind of option. But we just thought, because, you know, nonprofits are, you know, special, they're not like getting revenue that they're, you know, using for private use, it's for the public good. And so in that sense, we thought that it would make sense for them to get the larger grant.
I wasn't here last meeting, that we approved revisions. Did we ever decide to include the avenue? Any other residential areas other than the local landmark districts?
So we did not, because that takes away an incentive for local landmarking. So that was why we recommended not to go that route.
And also just with a national district, there's not a requirement for them to follow our design guidelines.
Well,
and
make
so
that a requirement. That would have been very easy to do. So I don't see that as a stumbling block on that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'd be curious about, nonprofits, if we could limit the amount of funds out of the $38,000 that could go to nonprofits, you know, put a cap on the amount available. If we have a concern that they might come in because like you said, four nonprofits basically, or four or five nonprofits, and they're not strong. So, I mean, we could cap the amount that we could go to nonprofits.
Lauren, is that, for nonprofit, is that, would that be per nonprofit per year, or is it per construction job? For instance, if Jeff had three jobs, can he come three times because it's three different jobs, or do they all qualify for one grant per 1 year?
From how I understand our guidelines, only one application per year per applicant.
Okay.
And that holds
per
true
owner, not address, per owner.
I would need to clarify the language.
Is the address the applicant or is the person?
No, I think the person is.
That's something we want to check into too.
No more than one grant shall be awarded per address per fiscal year. So it is address.
Okay, so it is my
address. So, back to my question.
So,
if Habitat, I'm going to use you since you're here, did one tonight, and then they had another house they were doing 2 months from now. Could
correct.
We apply for that as well? It's
correct.
A different address?
Yep. According to the current guidelines.
When it comes down to it, HPC has the final rule on where we allocate it to in our voting?
Yeah, so with the revised guidelines, basically how it would work is we have a deadline. It's like May 3rd. And so we'll wait for this upcoming fiscal year of funding. We'll wait to fund those until that deadline. And then if we get more applications than we have funding, so let's say we get $100,000 worth of applications, then we would bring it to HPC to ask you, how should we prioritize this?
That was my point. Did
Yep. And so if you see a lot of nonprofit applications and you're like, well, we want to help, you know, these individuals more, then you can make that determination.
So we have an opportunity, even if we leave it as you've described it here, to revisit if we see that there's a, you know, a consistent issue that we need to address in the revisions or guidelines.
Definitely, yeah. If
so,
you know,
we're not married to this, and you know, we can see and get a little bit of experience to understand how better to dial it in if it needs to be done.
Right.
And I would say too, just like with other programs, we're evaluating them. Just you know, that's why we brought these changes to you. So whether it's you guys or us, that we see something happening that maybe isn't matching the intent, then we can bring that up again.
Yeah.
So I'll come right back to you. I just want to make one point and say that I also don't want to lose the money because we have $38,000 that no one's using.
No.
Yeah. So I want to open it up. So I'd rather just get down to zero. It makes them want to get replenish the fund and say, well, you didn't use everything last year, so why?
With the way that we're asking for this, allowing or having the community development staff approve eligible projects, theoretically, Habitat for Humanity, I mean, Nonprofit A could come in with four applications at the same time for four different addresses, and you guys could approve that, and actually HPC would have no, we wouldn't have any way to say no to that, as everything is written right here.
No, they
so
approve
the
application. The
appropriateness, right?
No, not necessarily.
No, so
you gather all the applications. And on
right.
The third,
no, they
you
can
look
approve
at
the applications.
So
they gather them, and then on the third, if they're not over the large number, they can approve them. That's right. So in year four, if it don't go over 38,000, they can approve. But if amongst that four you go over the 38,000, then it comes back to us to determine priority.
Yep.
I thought every applicant came before the HPC.
Not what they're asking.
No, and again, we're trying to align this with the original intent of the program. So we would still let you know. So at the following meeting, we would say, as a presentation, say, the following projects were approved. And then you might actually see them as action items because a COA is required, you know, or something like that.
I'd like to make an additional motion on that then, that half of the funding be, the money going to nonprofits would be limited to half the amount available at the beginning of the funding.
And that's just one clarifying question then.
So all the applications are evaluated at once. At one time, they are not on a rolling basis. Is that correct?
Correct. So currently, because we're using unused funds from a previous fiscal year, we're doing it on a, you know, first by, you know, yeah, exactly. But once that May 3rd, so The May 3rd deadline is for like the next fiscal year of funding, so that will be where we'll wait until we get all of those applications to fund that next $50,000.
So if we're starting from square zero on May 3rd,
mm-hmm.
we will gather all applications, and
right.
if they are under, say, $50,000 for the mm-hmm. next year's allocation,
right.
you guys can just approve everything.
Yep.
If they are over that $50,000, then they come to
and we'll look
and reallocate.
And it's all eligible applications, you know.
All
we'll look, they have
yes.
to follow all the guidelines, all that. Yep.
So if we don't hit the limit, you guys can just give out the money. Because
mm-hmm.
we want to use every dollar that we can. If we are over our limit, then it comes to us to allocate.
Mm-hmm. When does fiscal year 20 start and new money is given?
July next 1. Year.
And that's if they give you money.
I'd also like to know how other nonprofits are going to be made aware that they are eligible for this grant if we do approve this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be part of our kind of marketing plan. Once we get these revisions passed, we're going to sit down with, you know, our marketing people here at the city and kind of talk, how do we get the word out that these changes have been made? Because we've sent out postcards in the past. People might have a, you know, a different idea of the program and it's changed now. So,
oh, yeah.
And that will be a part of that.
Well, I know we've never said no to, I don't think, since I've been on the board, to anyone that's come before us for one of these. I'm a little nervous about knowing each one, but I also feel you guys have good judgment.
My motion died because of lack of a second, but I'm still having major concerns.
Can you still, you didn't want to make a motion, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat it?
That the amount of funding that would go to, I'm going to modify my motion, that the amount of the funding that would go to nonprofits would be limited to half the amount allocated at the beginning of the session. But if you get to the point where you, at the end of the applications, and there's no more applications at that time, it would be open, you know, if there's money left over, then it would be open for that amount of money for nonprofits.
But the way it, before we ask for a second, but the way it's stated is you don't have to worry about that unless we go over to 50. Then
mm-hmm.
it's going to come before us to decide if the nonprofit or John Doe should.
Theoretically, what I'm saying is theoretically a nonprofit would, let me back up. And the staff, first come, first serve, an approval of this for the staff?
After the deadline. And if we still have funding available.
No, I mean, no. Prior to the deadline, if you have applicants, is it first come, first serve?
Right, currently, yeah.
For this
no,
fiscal
but
year.
We wait.
No, I'm saying and on wait. May 3rd.
Oh, on May 3rd.
On May 3rd, if
mm-hmm.
you have 7 applicants, all of them are asking for money, and
mm-hmm.
it's over the amount that we have allotted, is it first come, first serve, or would you allocate the remaining funds to all equally? I mean, I would be curious about that.
It comes to HPC, to decide if it's
so
over the amount in the fund.
So if we have 7 applications for
$60,000,
then we are not doing anything except putting
everything
it on the agenda for you to review.
Are there any scenarios where it wouldn't come from through the HPC? Because the certificate of appropriateness, I mean, what are some scenarios it wouldn't come? Because it sounds like it, regardless, it almost always comes to us. Right.
So if these changes are made, if an applicant, after the deadline, and we still have additional funding available, if an applicant wants to paint their house, and they apply, and they meet all of the, you know, requirements, that would be one where we wouldn't need to bring it to HPC for approval,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't need a COA,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they meet the requirements. But after we made that determination that we would approve that, we would present it to you just so you would know.
So painting. I still had to go, and that's what I did, but
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with it. I was just wondering.
Okay, so just for clarification,
yeah.
Let's say 8 people submitted, and you reviewed the first 4. And out of the 50,000, we've used 35,000. And the next 2 put us over the limit, and we still had two more applications. So that's going to put us over the 50. Do we review all of those, when that comes to 7 then? And choose from those 7, or are the first 4 that you already agreed to already passed go?
So we're going to be very like cut and dry about the May 3rd deadline. So whatever applications we have at the May 3rd deadline, that's what we will either approve them all because they're less than $50,000 worth, or we'll bring them to you to approve. And then that uses up the rest of the money. So I guess I...
Is it the, anyway? The amount that we get by that deadline, we look at all of them at once.
Yeah.
So if there's $35,000 worth of requests, done. If there's 51, all that goes to you.
Okay.
So we wouldn't do like whoever we got at a certain time because the it's we're going by the May 3rd.
I think the big question is the rolling evaluation versus evaluating all of them at once. So for this year, since we're using leftover money, it is first come, first serve.
Right.
But starting in the next fiscal year when we are starting from a full allocation, it mm-hmm. is everything gets evaluated at once.
Right.
So there wouldn't correct. Be a first four.
Yeah.
Right.
It would be all
I withdraw my motion.
Yep. Yep. And then, you know, once that goes through, we get all the applications in and we still have funding after that, then it's a first come, first serve again.
Crystal, did you have a question?
Nope. You got it
answered. Todd withdrew his motion. Do you have any more questions?
One more question. Going back to the new construction, because the old museum nerd in me sticks on that for some reason. So if a commercial company came in and wanted to demo a historic building, that was not a landmark. They could, but said that we will replace it with something that is similar or, you know, fits into all of the check boxes. That's my big fear with the new construction being eligible for this.
And this is for the because it's for the local district only, mm-hmm. they would have to come get a COA
okay.
from you guys to demo that building in the first place.
Okay,
so
yeah, gotcha.
That covers it.
Very rarely do we allow demolition unless it's by neglect.
I'm just thinking worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions? And if not, do I have a motion?
I make a motion to approve the additional proposed division.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passed.
We still got it.
Now we're going to action four, B, and put it all in perspective.
All right. So, so Jeff reached out to us from Habitat for Humanity. They did a new construction project in the 2nd and 3rd Avenue Historic District. All of that was approved through a COA at the May 24th meeting of HPC. And they, I think they came to multiple meetings to get that all approved. And so the house is built, and we can go to the next slide. And there's kind of a side-by-side, and then if you go to the next one, there's a picture that they sent. So Jeff reached out because he had heard about Historic Rehab Program, and this is kind of a unique circumstance because, one, it's new construction, which we just added to the program guidelines, and also because it's already built, this would be a retroactive funding, which is not something we normally do. We require that applicants come to us first before they start the project. But we kind of discussed it in community development. We thought this would be a worthy project of funding. We have that additional $38,000 to use, and so we thought this would be a great project to use that funding for. So we're asking for a special allocation of $7,500. That's the new grant amount that the new program guidelines allow. Because of the extra cost to Habitat for building in the local historic district, they used wood siding and a wood entrance door, which was all allowed through the COA. And as I mentioned, they don't currently qualify for funding, but we're asking for a special exception for them so that we can provide this funding. So staff recommends. This is one that we will also take to City Council since it's in a special kind of appropriation to their project. So we're asking for a recommendation to City Council.
Are we allowed to ask if there's anybody else in the pipeline looking for the remaining monies?
Before we go there, I'd like to know if Jeff has anything more to add.
Just that you guys are probably sick and tired of me. At least there's some new commission members that haven't met me yet. So I thank you guys for having me back. And we've just had a great project. So thank you guys for your faith in us, your patience with us, and really coming to a project that I think we can all be really proud of. So one thing, I don't know if you guys saw the article in the Gazette, but one thing that I have said many times, I've heard many times, is people asking me if this is a new house or a rehab, to which I turn around and like secretly celebrate, because to me that's the ultimate compliment that together we kind of hit the mark. So
I got to compliment you on the bill. It looks like it's been sitting there for 15 years.
Thanks for saying
except
that.
For the windows. Just kidding.
So I don't have anything to add. Just thank you guys very much. And thanks for your consideration of this special funding.
Okay, Diana, now what
division? Well, it's really just, is there anyone lined up that might miss out from the program? You know, I don't know if you're allowed to tell us if there are any in the pipeline for the remainder of the funds.
I definitely have interested applicants, but I kind of told them, let's wait until these new guidelines get passed so that you don't miss out on, you know, additional
better
funding.
Deal.
So I'm going to do kind of a email blast after this is goes through City Council and let them know. So definitely a few, but it is getting towards the end of the, like, working time for outside. Mm-hmm. So I imagine, you know, if they don't apply now, they'll just apply for the next fiscal year.
Timeline-wise, the 38 is until when, and when does the new, if we get a new allocation?
The 38 is just ongoing until it's spent down, and budget discussions, I believe, happen in March, and so we'll
so
know.
So this coming March for the following,
for the following
actually,
fiscal
they'll start,
year.
They'll start, departments start working on budgets this is October.
Yeah.
Like right about now, November, and then it goes to City Council for approval.
But if we get a new allocation, we will get it starting July 1.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so kind of how the timeline will work is we'll know in March if we'll have that allocation in the budget, mm-hmm. and so that's how we'll be able to
right.
take in applications.
Okay. So this 38 will have to last us until July 2020? Is that what I'm hearing?
2019.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do their March budgeting, and it becomes the budget in July for the next. Because
mm-hmm.
they're not on a fiscal year budget cycle. It might be helpful for the commission to understand the financial timeline
mm-hmm.
for the city. I'm
sure.
trying to remember if I saw it in any of the materials that came through. But.
Right, so the fiscal year, both city and state, is July 1st through June 30th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Federal government's October, but yeah, so that's the finance, the fiscal timeline.
I know you guys live and breathe it every day. For those of us out here in the other part of the world, you know, and I've had other
so
fiscal budgets.
So here's
it'd be
a
nice
tip.
To have a timeline.
So when we say fiscal year 2021,
yeah.
we're actually talking that's the year the fiscal year ends.
Yeah.
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 So I don't know if that will help remember it, but every once in a while I have to.
So we're
in
FY19 currently.
Yeah.
So the 38th is going to last us until July 1, essentially, until
yep.
June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
It'll last us, but on May 3rd, the 2019 applications will be reviewed then,
mm-hmm.
okay? Anything left over of that 38,000 will go until July of 2019, and then in July of 2019, the fiscal year 2020-21 kicks in, and it's a new amount. Whether or not it's another 38,000 or whatever, right? I mean, are you planning on budgeting for 2020-21 additional or a new budget?
Yes, I believe the request is for another 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then we could have, if this is approved, those other two, whatever those end up being, it could be, you know, 50,000 plus whatever's
right.
left of the 38.
Right. So it's in our best interest to spend as much money.
Yes.
Yeah. As we can in order to justify our budget request in March for the
mm-hmm.
next year's budget.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, I'm sold.
Do we have a motion?
A motion to approve this project.
Second. Fundraising consideration for historic preservation 1638 Third Avenue. You got a second?
No, Art second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Could something like that be used in the marketing as an example of what we're doing, since this is kind of retroactive? You know, would that be usable? I'm just curious.
Can you clarify your question? Sorry.
So you said you're going out and marketing these new guidelines and recommendations. Mm-hmm. Would it be a marketing opportunity to use this as an example of what?
Oh, Habitat?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Yeah,
Jeff,
definitely.
Jeff, thanks for bringing this to us. And
Jeff, can we use Habitat?
Thank you. Always.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And as Amanda was saying, she was sitting here, you're welcome to stay for the whole meeting if you want, if you've got places to go.
We've got an event tonight, so I'm going to head over there.
All right.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll go out of order again and go to 4D, consideration of local historic landmark application, 1228 Third Avenue Southeast, the Perkin House.
All right. So we received an application from Friends of CR Historic Preservation for this property, the Perkins House, built in 1897, and it was listed on the National Register in 2003 with criteria C, which basically is like the architectural components of the house is what qualified it for the National Register. Here's some pictures. The staff report, I kind of go into more detail of some of the defining features, but definitely that tower-looking thing.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. So really, what you're determining whether you recommend this to move on to the next stage. The next stages are we would take this to SHPO for review, so they would look it over. And they have about a month. State Historic Preservation. Yeah. And then once they review, they'll provide comments to us. And if it's good to go ahead. We would take it to City Planning Commission for recommendation and then would have a City Council hearing, public hearing.
Okay, we have two representatives. One is the owner, Eric, and then Amanda is Vice President of Friends. So we'll start with Eric. Do you have anything you'd like to add? Or any questions?
Not really. I'm hopeful that this this area is essentially the Med Quarter now, and I think that this area has been kind of depressed and dilapidated for a long time. My hope is that this can be the first step of like really turning around. All the other houses on the block are pretty dilapidated, and so if this one got fixed up, that would be, I think, make a significant change.
Are there any questions for Eric?
More comments. I was reading the history a bit, and Perkins worked for Northwestern Mutual. I actually used to work for them. Have you ever reached out for funding?
I have not.
You should.
Yes.
I think that's a very interesting tie to they're very well connected in the community.
Yeah, indeed. I'd be super interested in talking about that.
Yeah. We can exchange contact with them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, for the record, this is going to be brutally expensive, and it'll be a lot of fun in hindsight when it's finished, but it's going to be, there's a tremendous amount of challenges that are unique to this type of project and unique to this specific project, the old mechanicals, just the way that it was like hacked up into multifamily, mm-hmm. and then all the mess that's involved in that. And then, any and all assistance is greatly appreciated.
You don't qualify as of now for the funds we just talked about because you're national. But if this becomes local and you're still working on it, which is going to take quite a while.
This is likely to take at least a couple years. Yeah, I'm hoping that we can dig in earnest in the spring or summer, but I've also been saying that for more than a year.
Well, this, once it goes to ship, it will take several months.
They have 30 days.
They have 45 days to review, and this is also currently on the National Register, so that would help to reduce and expedite that review.
I'm also applying for state and historic tax credits, and so CHPO's already, I'm already working with them on that side of things.
So it'll be very familiar. Brutal, yeah.
But,
yeah. Welcome to our world.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Eric?
No, I'd like to offer all my support that I can give.
Yeah.
He's got a hammer that fits your hand.
Yeah. And I have a few able-bodied children.
So. Amanda, do you have anything to add from Friends?
No, I would like to thank Eric for this opportunity to assist, because it's an exciting, very exciting project. And as he said, this property is almost surrounded by the Med District, mm-hmm. and it is not, it's not close enough to any of the local historic districts to be brought into that. So to have it as a local historic landmark is essential to help save this property and keep it safe, and then also to hopefully encourage other owners on the block to follow Eric's lead and maybe help improve some other properties. So thank you for your time to review this application.
I could add too, just with the work of the subcommittee, this is a good example of what we've been talking about in terms of what are strategies that once you've identified properties, you reach out to the property owners, and you know, this is just a good strategy to preserve those. So,
Eric, did Bob come to you? Did you reach out, or did someone reach you?
I reached out because of Robin Cash. Yeah, I reached out because Robin Cash had referenced it.
Actually, I think when I sat down with,
I was meeting about something totally unrelated to Robin, and we referenced the property next door that actually was selling drugs by the way. So
Is it all convenient?
Yeah, I was all fired up about that, and that's I think that conversation ended up bringing Bob in somehow. And so that's.
So yeah. Between the neighborhood, Safe Sierra Friends, this is already, and HPC, this is already a really good networking going, so it's all positive. Todd?
When was the, I'm sorry, did we all went through this, when was the house subdivided into any apartments?
I think in 1920s.
Mm-hmm. So really, it's almost historic, the fact that it goes back to the 20s as a place.
Yeah,
it was
1920s.
Yeah, that's kind of what I saw. Mm-hmm. So that's almost historic in context.
Mark Sipner said a lot of the properties did that because in the 20s there was a real shortage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been right after World War I.
Yeah, just the pre-depression, yeah.
And that would have been kind of right at the tail end of the beginning of the craftsman period,
yeah.
Where the middle class was really coming up. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other questions for anyone involved?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a motion?
Advance 1228 3rd Avenue Southeast.
Second. So first and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. You're both welcome to stay longer.
That's a wonderful fireplace.
Yeah,
so
that's
I think there's a couple like fireplaces that have been covered up. I think there's like two, maybe three. Which like Shippo's.
Does that one still exist?
That one still exists and that one's uncovered.
That's
but like
cool.
The main fireplace on the front of the house, there's no openings on the inside, and we suspect that there's at least one, if not two, openings. Right now, Shippo's pushing back because one of them was covered up by a closet in the 1920s, which is silly that they would prefer a closet as opposed to like a fireplace. But we're working through the process. Yeah, it's going to be fun because this house has a lot of like I'm sure fun surprises.
Well, thank you very much for taking it on. It's a great, great step.
Yeah.
And maybe in time we can get that neighborhood to come down and meet for
it's,
that point.
Yeah, it's got to make a splash. Because those other ones are so bad, that are even all so bad right now. I would assume that it would be hard to miss.
Yeah. And if you could, reach out to those if you know some of the owners.
I do know some of the owners. We're not on the same. We're not the same way. Like, I wish that the city would have, and this came from the college district meeting this afternoon, but I wish that the city would have kind of followed through and put a little bit more emphasis on that after the Med Quarter was approved.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they approved it, they got PCI in there, and then they just like moved on to other things. I wish that they would have helped to kind of push some of these projects like right, you know, in the adjacent blocks, because you have all those jobs down there, and those are all you know, very good paying jobs, but yet nobody wants to, you know, even park their car a block away and walk to PCI.
That's a big push for the repetition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's like 16. But anytime anything comes before us, we do our best
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially once it's outside of a national or a local district.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go to action item 4C, demolition.
Should we do the presentation first, or it doesn't really matter?
As long as everyone's going to be here for the full time period, it's perfectly fine to do the demo. I just want to make sure everyone who's here hears the presentation.
I put a check by that mistake. We can go to 4A if you want.
So I think the words section 106 have been thrown out at a couple meetings, and so based on the last meeting this was thrown out, I thought it would be good to actually do a presentation and share information about what section 106 actually is and what it isn't. I did pass out a handout, which is just a really quick brief on section 106, and then you'll see in that first page ACH mentioned. That's what the second page is about, and that's the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. So going to play a short video first and then have a couple slides with some information. So.
Did you bring popcorn?
Did not.
Damn.
Thanks.
Brownies? Yeah.
True.
There are several areas of environmental law that local public agencies, or LPAs, might encounter on a federal aid project. These areas address a project's effects on the natural environment. Things like air and water quality, wetlands, wildlife or endangered species. The social environment, things that affect our quality of life, like the displacement of homes or businesses or community cohesion impacts, particularly as they relate to minority and low-income populations, historic sites, and parks and recreation areas. The National Environmental Policy Act.
What if we just go to YouTube? Would that be better, maybe?
If you type in section 106 video, it's almost the first thing that pops up. Scroll down a little bit.
Is it this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Consultations. NEPA's process umbrella
can you back up
a project's compliance with all and recreation areas. The National Environmental Policy Act, known as NEPA, provides a framework for environmental analyses, reviews, and series of discussions known as consultations. NEPA's process umbrella covers a project's compliance with all pertinent federal environmental laws. While NEPA provides a coordinated environmental review process, the related environmental law specifies what an agency must do to comply with its particular requirements, which can vary widely. One such law, Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, requires federal agencies to consider the effects of their projects on historic properties. A historic property is any prehistoric or historic district, site, building, structure, or object that is included in or eligible for inclusion in the National Register of Historic Places. The Advisory Council on Historic Preservation and the State Historic Preservation Officers, or SHPOs, administer the federal or state historic preservation program. The National Historic Preservation Act does not mandate preservation of historic properties. However, if your project receives federal aid funding, your agency must participate in a consultation process that considers the effects of your project on those properties. Depending on the project, consulting parties may include the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, your SHPO, the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, federally recognized Indian tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations, local governments, and the public. Let's take a look at the consultation process and the responsibilities of agencies in complying with the National Historic Preservation Act. While the consultation process is somewhat iterative, there are four basic steps. Initiate consultation. Identify and evaluate historic properties. Assess effects and resolve effects. To initiate consultation, a local agency typically sends a letter of correspondence to either the SHPO or the state's Department of Transportation or state DOT, identifying the project location, and who is involved. And if known, an agency will also identify any historic properties in the project area. In order to properly identify and evaluate any potential archaeological and historic sites, an agency needs to utilize a qualified employee or hire a consultant. The evaluator will begin by performing file and literature searches to determine if the property is on or potentially eligible for the National Registry of Historic Places. The resulting report summarizes the site's setting and historical context, project information, including maps, and any cultural resources that were identified. If there are no historic properties in the project area, or no adverse effects are likely to occur to ones that are present, an agency will issue a letter with its findings, which completes the consultation process. On the other hand, if adverse effects are likely to occur, an assessment must be made. An adverse effect occurs when an element of a historic property is altered in a manner that diminishes the integrity of the property's location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, or association. For example, noise or visual blight can be considered an adverse effect. The public and the consulting members of the project team can help determine any adverse effects resulting from the project. Once potential adverse effects are identified, an agency needs to evaluate possible alternatives or modifications that would help resolve the effects by avoiding, minimizing, or mitigating them. For example, the alignment of a road might be altered to avoid affecting a historic property, or a commemorative publication or plaque might be erected. The process concludes when the agency finalizes a memorandum of agreement between consulting agencies. To illustrate the process, let's consider a drainage and road improvement project in a town we'll call Old Town, which was established in the early 19th century. To initiate the consultation process, the project manager sends a letter to the SHPO describing the project and providing a map of the project area. The city of Old Town hires a consultant with recent experience developing similar studies for the state DOT. During the course of her literature review, she discovers evidence of an early 19th century tavern at the corner of First and Main. During a site visit, she confirms that there is no longer any evidence of the tavern from the ground's surface. The project team then conducts a subsurface investigation of the area and finds the foundation of the tavern and an outhouse. Further excavation indicates that the site might yield important information about the lifestyle of Old Town's earliest residents. Unfortunately, given its proximity to the street, the drainage and road improvement work would destroy the archaeological site. To resolve the adverse effects, the project team consults with the SHPO, the local historical society, the state DOT, and the Federal Highway Administration's division office. After the artifacts are analyzed and a report is prepared, the team agrees to erect an interpretive sign describing what was found and to give any recovered artifacts to the county museum. With everyone satisfied with this arrangement, the project team concludes the consultation process by writing a memorandum of agreement. As we have seen, as a sponsor of a federally aided transportation project, your agency may be required to conduct studies and coordinate with other parties. The necessary activities and degree of your involvement depend on the nature of your project and your state DOT's practices. Your state DOT can help you navigate the requirements and develop approaches that adequately evaluate and address your project's effect on historic properties.
So, although this was DOT related, it actually involves any federal undertaking, which I'll hit on here. But so, Section 106, and this is from the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, encourages but does not mandate preservation. It requires federal agencies to take into account the impacts of projects. This really mandates consultation. So. As they stated in that video, you have the State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO. There could be other interested parties that might be other agencies or members of the public. And then the other thing it requires is the consultation with the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and that's giving them an opportunity to comment. So when does this fall into place? So the reason why Ron Moosman brought this up was we had on the agenda the demolition of the low-lift building from the water department over in Mohawk Park. And so Section 106 process is triggered when there's a federal undertaking that involves either federal property, federal funds, and that could be Army Corps of Engineers, excuse me, DOT, HUD. Those are all examples of agencies that have gone through Section 106. If there's a permit, license, or approval required. So those are the triggers. So you could have two outcomes from the process, and that again is a memorandum of agreement. The city of Cedar Rapids has one of those, which the HPC is a signatory on, regarding the city's flood control system. And that would detail how adverse effects are addressed, and either by avoiding or mitigating. And then the other result could be that basically nothing is done. So it ends up with the lead federal agency that is either doing the funding, the approving. That agency will determine then the outcome of the project and the actions that take place. And it could be restarting the Section 106 process. It could be approving it as is. It could just be not doing the project at all. So again, just wanted to give a quick review of Section 106 because it's been thrown out there a couple times. I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands what it is and what it isn't. So, any questions?
Where does that road construction, Mount Vernon Road, affecting that wall, the Oak Hill Cemetery?
Yeah, so that does not involve any federal funds. So the Section 106 process is not triggered there. Okay. However, being a certified local government, SHPO does want us to make sure that we share information, ask for your input, which I don't remember when it was, a month ago maybe, we had the project manager come give a presentation, and we'll be back again too. And really the focus on that was, again, the wall. So, yeah.
When one of you ladies or Jillian, is there any way you forward that link to Ron, because this was his ticket item, and he had to be out of town.
And I can send this as a PDF, too.
Great. Just to bring him up to speak, because he couldn't be here, he's out of town. Are there any questions in regard to the presentation? And that's not an action item, is it? So we don't.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to action item 4C, 1209 Elmhurst Drive Northeast, structure modification reviews.
So this is a garage that was built in 1915 at 1209 Elmhurst Drive Northeast. The city assessor says that the condition is normal, but the applicant informed us that it was damaged by a fallen tree branch actually knocked from the foundation. This was included in the Cedar Rapids Citywide Historic and Architectural Reconnaissance Survey in 2014 and was identified as not eligible for a National Register nomination. Here's an image of the house, and it was pretty difficult to see the garage, but you can kind of tell in that picture to the right there's some damage. So because it's identified as ineligible for local landmarking and there's no evidence of historic significance, and also considering the damage, staff is recommending immediate release. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
This is just for the garage?
Just the garage, yeah.
Are there any questions? Well, I talked to Mark. He always usually sends me a red flag to give something to dog your remark and he didn't say anything. There are no questions. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve demolition application.
Second.
It's been moved. First and second. Any questions in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And action item 4D. Demolition applications under hold. Here the only one we have is the river intake and low lift station city project. The hold expires 11/26, is that correct?
And was it 106?
No. So again, it's the current action. So it's not if there was federal funding in it in the 20s or 30s or it's the current action.
I did speak with Mark. Do you have any questions first?
No. What did Mark have to say? That's my question.
You know, 1 minute here.
Yeah.
Mark suggests leaving this on hold. He wants more architectural pictures for documentation purposes. And he suggests holding another criteria for the documentation. So we don't have to vote on anything if you want to leave it on hold. We don't have to vote if you want to take it off.
Utilities has let me know that they were able to find, it's like a scan of a scan, but some of the architectural drawings. So I can, when I get that, I can share that either with the whole group or at least with Mark. So it's.
And the city's not hell bent to get this down tomorrow, correct?
Correct.
So holding it hold isn't going to.
No.
So we don't need to act on this if we're going to leave it. So is everyone in favor of just leaving it as is?
I have a question. I wasn't here for that meeting. I was just wondering if there's been any discussion about reuse of the building or if it's that bad a condition that can't be rehabbed or for some type of use.
Yeah, good. Yep, that question was asked at the last meeting and a couple factors. So one of the things that was asked is could it be used as maybe like a pavilion or some sort of park facility? There is a pavilion, I don't know, 35, 40 feet away. And there's also other issues from a safety standpoint with the building, what's inside it. Don't have it on this, I don't think we have it with us, but I can send some images from the inside. It's actually two stories, and so on the inside. And so there's issues with the interior. There's also a, I believe it's a 20 by 25 or a 25 by 20 pit behind that that is also part of that, the demoing and mitigating. And so there's an issue with that as well. It's also 30 feet away from the active railroad line. Not to mention issues of whether or not it's you can structurally you know, if you can mitigate all those other things that are a safety issue, if you could structurally reuse that, and there's also ADA improvements that would have to be made as well, so.
Thank you.
There was a pipe, I believe, Adam, right, that you said froze?
Correct. They found out that there were pipes at some point that they didn't know were there, froze and burst, and so there is, I don't know how much water, but there's a fair amount of water on the inside.
Might be more.
Tim last time mentioned about using some of the architectural details. Has anyone reached out to the Parks Department?
I started with utilities, and so I'm going to set up a meeting with them in the Parks Department to see if there's any opportunity there.
What is the construction?
What
type of construction is hard to tell from this? Is it almost looks like stucco? But
I do not know.
It could be stucco.
It's really modeled a lot like the water plant, which is about two blocks down the street.
Yep.
Maybe it is brick.
And that's someone we might want to reach out to in case they have any, because they did a phenomenal job for their add-on. They did about 6, 7, 8, I don't know, even strike a time, 10 years ago.
Right.
You never know they added on to that building. Yeah. I mean, they really did a great job.
Is there a city policy, and is there an opportunity for any kind of salvage on this? I mean, not just the structural aspects, but like anything inside that maybe.
So I would have to ask, but I believe the answer is yes, because we've allowed that for other properties we've acquired. The one that sticks in my mind is the old Best Western Hotel that was on the river on First Street Northwest. But that would be part of that conversation I have with utilities and parks to see if either for, because if maybe there's not a city interest in reusing that from a park standpoint, but if to open
public,
it up to the
public.
Salvage,
yeah.
Yep.
That finishes the action items. I guess we can move to 5, discussion items, proactive preservation.
There's nothing from our end.
We meet Monday, right?
Oh,
yep.
Yeah, subcommittees. Well, I guess I can give a little update.
Also, I will not be able to be present. We've got a couple of alternates. So I don't know whether Arthur, I don't remember who the other one
was. I was another alternate. I won't be able to make it.
Monday's real rough.
Okay.
How many 7 then? 5? No, 2.
Well, we have, so it was Mark.
3.
Ron.
Ron.
So 7?
Amanda,
Ron.
Bob.
Amanda, Bob. Jay. And Cindy. Mm.
So without...
I think we'll be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's for that's on.
It's on Monday.
Monday
it's
and then
5:30.
5:30, and then the Beaver Park Bridge is the 22nd, which is the following Monday.
And I hope on that one that we do continue on with the fundraising because I've already started prepping on this.
Great.
Okay.
I'll be there.
You know what I'm doing to people. When I ring my haircuts, I say, would you like to round up to your style and not? But I'm thinking about that. Hey, every penny counts. Okay, that moves us to announcements. Did you have any announcements?
Not an announcement, I had a question, and I may have missed it, or it came to the HPC earlier than when I started. I saw the Ely House was demolished. I had attended the city planning. I thought the process was to get approval for the site plan, and then if there was demolition, the request would come to the HPC.
It did. So
it did, but it was before.
Right, and the contractor for that development worked pretty hard trying to find a location for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
The only announcement I have is just to thank you for new members, because you guys are so far ahead of the game than I was when I started. I mean, it took me a good year to catch up. I couldn't do acronyms with my wife. I still have hard times with it. So I think you guys are doing outstanding. I think you asked great questions. I just want to thank you for that. That's all I have. And you guys as well.
Move to adjourn.
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.